Tonight, we're going to look at another story of John the Baptist. So our designated reader, Leroy, get chapter 3 of John and verse 22 to start.
Well, after this, Jesus and his disciples went out into Judean countryside where he spent some time with them and baptized. Now John was also was baptizing at Anon near Salim, because there was plenty of water there, and the people were constantly coming to be baptized. This was before John was put in prison. An argument developed between some of John's disciples and a certain Jew over the matter of ceremonial washing. They came to John and said to him, "Rabbi, that man who was with you on the other side of the Jordan, the one you testified about, well, he is baptizing and everyone is going to him."
All right, let's stop there. Now this is after Jesus had been with Nicodemus, and then he goes out. And he must have been preaching and begins baptizing. A little different area than where John the Baptist is. So, because of what had happened at the temple and things like that, Jesus starts drawing a bigger crowd than John the Baptist. So we can always see where the devil works, how he tries to undermine anything that's going on that's good. And so the disciples come to John, John's disciples, and they begin to say, paraphrasing, "What in the world's going on here? This guy's baptizing, and he's drawing bigger crowds than we are. And by the way," remember where it said ceremony, they had a question about the ceremonial cleansing? What they were really saying was, did Jesus have the right to baptize? That was their argument. So you can see the predicament that John the Baptist is in. Now, if you read your emails, Sue always asks me, what am I going to talk about on Friday night? And this week I put something about why I admire John the Baptist. And the main reason I admire him is I think that this would be an absolute hard thing for a person to take. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I thought there's a verse that said Jesus never baptized.
I thought I never heard of him baptizing.
Read it again. I just read them.
In mine it says Jesus was allowing his disciples to baptize.
Okay. All right, same difference. Why would I admire John the Baptist?
Because he was number one and he stepped down to be number two.
Boy, to me, that is a hard thing to do. I think that is just absolutely a hard thing to do, because you have to have that human tendency. What do you all think of that?
I think in here it puts it very... John answered, "The success I've had was a gift to me from heaven. You yourselves are witnesses that I told everyone I was not the Messiah, but only a messenger sent ahead of him to prepare the way."
Okay.
Well, the real thing is I've really never seen it done very graciously. And that's why I think it's such a hard thing. I mean, I've never been, well, I don't know, I've been in that. Can't think of a situation where I've been in that, but it is a challenge, I know it is.
I mean, that's kind of different. I don't know what you were saying at that time. The first thing, for whatever reason, comes to my head was the lady who receives all the attention, all the beauty, and someone prettier comes along, and now she's like all men. Or in this thinking also that thing about our transfer of power with their presidents. They do seem to do a pretty good job at being able to step down. I mean, I've heard some stories about previous presidents, but you know, at least for the public eye, it's pretty good. Being able to step down and let someone else assume the position.
Do you think this was a temptation to John the Baptist? You were going to say something.
I did. I said I didn't think Jesus ever baptized.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Okay. Do you think this was a temptation to John?
What was it? The question again. I missed the first part.
So, you know, we're all human.
The fact that John the Baptist is decreasing and Jesus is increasing.
Is that a temptation to him?
Yeah. Okay, got to know.
John's verbalized and said, I must decrease and he must increase.
He announced that before he baptized him.
Pardon?
He announced that before he baptized him.
Okay.
Intellectually knowing it and feeling different, feeling about it is whatever things. Just as John was human.
Okay. Terry?
Temptation is if the guy come up and tell me, hey, look at him, he's over there baptizing. That was a temptation.
Well, do you think the Lord is speaking through these disciples?
That's right.
I mean, it's one thing to kind of, you know, as Sue said tonight about 7:24, why do you think nobody comes to Friday night anymore? Now, you know, that certainly was an ego booster for me to sit there and say, well,
there was nobody
must
there,
be though. The house.
Yeah, you know,
I mean, you kind of go through everything except saying, well, maybe it's the speaker. I mean, you know, that's a pretty hard one to deal with. So, you know, I thought it was definitely house cleaning. So, I mean, you know, here's disciples. Not only they say, just in case you haven't noticed, our crowds are getting down to nothing, and his crowds are increasing. This has to be the work of the devil. Because I think the disciples were not interested in what was going on. They were John's disciples were interested in what's in it for us. Now, y'all just said no temptation. He understood it all, and this is great. Well, then how do you explain what happened to John when he was sitting there in prison?
Well, I don't think he had an understanding of what... I don't think he had any more understanding of the Christ's mission versus the disciples. And I think that was certainly lead to questions and anxieties.
From another angle, if you really did believe he is Christ, then you would wonder, why am I sitting in jail if he really is the Christ? How come he hasn't gotten me out of this?
Yeah.
Well, how many of his disciples would come to him in jail and say, come on, you know, what are you doing? You know, why isn't Jesus getting you out of here? Well, you know, and just tempting, that peer pressure that, you know, it's got to come and make him think, like I said, he's only human. You don't take so much of that. But, yeah, really, why aren't you? You know.
Okay.
I think he was as human as any of us are. I think ministers also often, you know, the thing I'm thinking of is how many ministers burn out in ministry. And they say the number one cause is because they have done so much and then they feel it's not appreciated or, you know, feel devalued or something like that. So maybe that's where Satan hits us the most.
Well, I think it's just, maybe I'm looking at it wrong, and I certainly have a perspective because I'm going to come to it in a minute. But I personally, being a very, very, very competitive person, just would find that very hard to do. And, you know, that's just the way it is. So I that's why I admire him, because I see something in him that I think I would have to struggle with. hopefully I would come to the right conclusion, but it certainly, I just think it's hard for anybody to, not be concerned. But he handled it perfectly.
Okay? I think that John believed that Jesus was the Messiah.
Yes.
I think he questioned that.
Yes.
But I don't think he understood Christ's mission. Because I think he was like the rest of them. Mm-hmm. They thought he was going to set up an empire to take care of the Romans.
Okay. How did the religious leaders of the day, of the church, how did they handle this problem in a different way? Because remember, when John was at the height of his glory in his preaching, he was the one that was drawing the great crowds. How did the priest and the rulers handle that?
They were very jealous.
They were absolutely jealous. And they went out and they heard him and they asked some of the questions of what must we do to be saved? Paraphrasing. But they were mad and they were plotting to kill or get rid of John the Baptist. And then, of course, along comes Jesus, who starts drawing the crowds and takes some of the pressure. And when we get to the death of John the Baptist, we'll see what big mistake John the Baptist made that created the problem where he lost his head. But at one time, they were plotting to kill him because he was drawing the crowds. Now, what should we, in our witnessing for other people, what should we uphold? What should we draw attention to?
What should we draw attention to? To Jesus Christ.
Well,
resurrection.
That's nice. Is that what we do?
No.
We're getting closer, but we just talk about the Sabbath.
Well, the Sabbath, nothing wrong with that either. See? But what do we draw attention to?
Denomination.
How big we are, or how many schools we have, or how many hospitals we have, or how many churches, or members, or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And not only us, lots of denominations draw attention to the statistical things and how big of a crowd that we can draw, or how many people we're touching, or how many things like that.
And how nice the chandeliers are. That's very important.
Well, some churches. I've been on church boards where I thought we were going to get in a fist fight over the color of carpet. So these are things. And so here's John the Baptist, who had all the attention, and yet he was willingly to step aside and let Jesus take the forefront. That says a lot about him. So should we. We should always be careful that we're not the center personally, or the church isn't the center drawing attention to itself. A denomination is not the center, or Christianity's not the center. Christ has to be the center. And we've all heard preachers where they were the center, and if you don't believe it, turn on the TV and flip through the channels and see what you see. You know, you see preachers, as you listen to them, it's always, to me, a lot of them, they're the center of the message and not Jesus. So.
You know, the challenge of that to me is knowing how not to be identified as a meaning something. Sometimes we make it mean something, like, okay, we got all these people, or you know, why aren't they coming Friday night, or why is this happening or that happening? We're taking it and we're doing some kind of comparative thing of, well, it's because of, you know, and that to me is the challenge.
Mm-hmm. And we also have to be very careful when we have opportunity to think, and I'm going to pick on Jim because he's the one that told me about a person here a while back that had an opportunity to make a speech to quite a lot of people. And I think his subject was, did Jesus come out, God come out of the most holy place into the holy place? Or You see, I mean, what a waste of time, in my opinion. What a waste of time. When you have a, how many people were there? You know, a couple of hundred business people, and that's your message. So,
it. I think the message has been, from my experience, it was mostly fear and legalism.
Mm-hmm. And that's not okay. The power, got to have that power. Okay, keep going. What John says.
But to this, John replied, a man can receive only what is given to him from heaven. You yourselves can testify that I said, I am not the Christ, but I am sent ahead of him. The bride...
Now, let's stop there for a second. Why did John say make that statement? Yeah, absolutely. They remember, these were his disciples, and by human nature, which one of the did they want to see be at the top of the totem pole was John the Baptist. And so he's reminding them that he was not the Messiah. Now, one of the things that we see John, who wrote this book, is very, from the very beginning, he always puts John in a very Baptist, in a very good light, but he's always remindful to whoever reads his letter that he was not the Messiah, that he was subservient to the Messiah, and that's why he has this story in here. Because even after the crucifixion and the resurrection, there were still people that believed that John the Baptist was the Messiah. So that's why John's writing all of this, to always point out the Baptist role. So John is saying, I told you I'm not the Messiah. Okay, continue.
The bride belongs to the bridegroom. The friend who attends the bridegroom waits and listens for him and is full of joy when he hears the bridegroom's voice. That joy is mine. And it is now complete.
Okay, let's stop.
Greater, let's, I must become less.
Yeah, let's stop there. Why the bridegroom analogy?
Well, John spoke of the church as being the bride of Christ.
Okay.
Well, doesn't John say here that he was thrilled when he recognized...
Yeah, but why would he use the bridegroom analogy?
Just an analogy that Christ used quite often in several of his stories, and it seems to be something that everybody could relate to.
Okay, and how would they be able to relate to that?
Because they got married.
Okay.
What was the cultural heritage? That was very significant.
Part of it. It's also very Old Testament. Many, many verses and chapters. God had talked about His people and the church, His people and the bride. And where do you think all the time where He saw you're unfaithful, you're committing spiritual adultery? It was from this relationship of the bride and groom, or God and His people. So the people were very, very familiar with that. And so when John brought this analogy, part of it's from the Old Testament, which they could relate to. And then second, the best man in the weddings for the Jewish people in the culture was a little bit different than it is today, because back then the best man did everything at the wedding, for before the wedding. He's the one that gave out the invitations. He's the one that figured out where the place was going to be and the party and all of this. So he was the one that was absolutely instrumental in the wedding for the preparation. And then, of course, when they got married, his duties were done. So we see John the Baptist using an illustration culturally they were very familiar with, scripturally from the Old Testament, saying, it was my privilege to be the best man. But now here is the groom. And this is Jesus. So that's where this analogy is coming from.
The one who comes from above...
No, go back to the first statement. That
the
statement just before that.
He must become greater.
Yes.
And I must become less.
Okay. What different versions have?
Just increase, I must decrease. It's just...
Yeah.
He must increase, I must decrease.
Okay. Anybody else have anything different?
Become greater and greater, and I must become less and less.
Okay, is that the New English?
And, it's New Living.
New Living, okay. Yeah. Very powerful, powerful statement. He must become greater and greater, and I must become less and less. By the way, that's our spiritual witness. It cannot be about us. It cannot be about winning an argument. I used to love debate, took debate, was very good at it, and I used to love to argue. But when it came to the spiritual things, what good was that? You see, because it became personal. And it became, well, listen here, I can prove to you, that where does that get you? So it has to be that we decrease, and the picture of God, the knowledge of God, the love of God is increased. And here again, John the Baptist understood it perfectly. Okay, Leroy? Yes?
It seems interesting to me that how we do something in the business world, the sports world, John the Baptist would team up with Christ. They would maybe get more followers if they did it together, and John would actually fold in underneath and become one of Christ's disciples. But he didn't even do that. He just said, I've got to basically disappear. Mm-hmm. Which would be even harder going back to your point earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Why do you think they didn't join forces?
Controversy the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he did this, well, he did that.
Yeah. In fact, do you know how Jesus handled this controversy? He left. When this controversy came up, he left, and next 2 weeks from tonight, we're going to see how he starts his trip to another region, and he goes through Samaria, and guess who he meets? Samaritan woman at the well. So his answer to this controversy was to take his disciples and leave and get out of the region totally. Because he didn't want that competition in his own disciples. What was the last thing the Thursday before Jesus died on Friday, what was their last concern? Who's going to sit on the right hand and who's going to sit on the left and who's going to be the greatest? And this is 3.5 years later. So can you imagine how they felt? So you can see that Jesus, when this controversy came up, he leaves.
Ernie, I'd like to say one thing before
yes.
we go on. About I must decrease and he must increase. I think that's a very real scenario in today's world in our worship services. I used to teach music, you know, and I taught these students that when they were playing for church or when they were not performing, they were giving worship to God, and it's a whole different thing. And the people in the audience can tell the difference if it's a performance or it's worship where the glory all goes to God. Today you can tell the difference in who gets the applause. I mean, you may not like me saying that, but it's the truth. Musicians know what applause is about. And it's not just a spontaneous appreciation. It is to their glory. And, you know, we can't take I tell them, we can't take one corner of the glory for us. You know, worship is all about God.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly it's nurture to the family of God and all of that too. But it's not praise part of the time for those up front are to be worshipers as well. They are not to be
mm-hmm.
performers on
yeah.
stage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No.
That's my take on it.
Well, I think, has anybody got any comments? Yes.
I have a question. I guess we can be on this verse forever, so I'll try to be quick. Is this a fair comparison of John the Baptist to us today? You say, I must decrease while he increases. Because obviously John went out to set the path, or it was the forerunner,
mm-hmm.
and before Jesus came.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously he went out there to get everything started. Jesus comes, and now he's decreasing. Well, Jesus is already here. So do we ever increase? What is our increase? Where do we get our increase from that we have to decrease?
Okay. That's an excellent question. Do we see ourselves as a person or a denomination in the same shoes today as John the Baptist was before Christ came the first time? Do we perceive ourselves as a denomination or as a person that we are in the same shoes as John the Baptist was before the first coming of Christ as we are before the second coming of Christ?
I think we are too,
and we're not careful, we're the sinner.
Well, absolutely we do. We're taught that. We are the with Elijah message, John the Baptist message, so we view ourselves as John the Baptist. So I think what you ask an excellent question. I think that's the challenge today is, do we have the ability to say he must increase and we must decrease? I think it's easy to say yes. I'm telling you, for me, it's not personally, and I think the denomination is certainly a challenge for them.
I think it is personally too, that all of us, like some of us more than others, but all of us put ourselves and center everything around ourselves. And if we're going to be true disciples of Christ, we got to make the main part of our life Him first, and our second, ourself, third and fourth. Because we should have Him first, and others second, and then somewhere down the line. Mm-hmm. So we do need to decrease ourselves and increase Him.
Yeah, I think it's the challenge that we have is that we. He increase and we decrease. And they're nice words to say that. I'm just saying I think it's a tough job.
We, as a denomination, we like to talk about how many hospitals and schools and millions of members. I wonder if that's related when God told the kings, don't count your people.
Well, I think that we have a right to be proud of what we do, but you know, the main question I think that is germane to this is, what are we known for? And if we were known for caring for the poor and the sick through our medical and hospital and our teaching, I think that's a fantastic thing to be known for. But I think, you know, most of the time, what we're known for. And a lot of that is our own fault, because that's what we present. So.
Well, sometimes when you're speaking to someone of another denomination, they try to blow themselves up by, oh, we have so many people, or, you know, and then so to kind of counteract that, well, we have, you know,
that's the way it works. I mean, you're exactly right. Well, we're the highest per capita giving people of any denomination. We're second now, but we were once at one time we were high. You know, so see, well, what does that prove? But you're exactly right. That's what we want to do, is to argue, to position. And that's exactly what was going on with John the Baptist. And he understood what we should understand. Unless we're glorifying God, then people see us. Any more comments? Never like to leave some. And what Sandy said, I think, is very, very good. That's, We have music in churches now that the great controversy or great talk is, you know, is this acceptable or what? And the only thing I look at is when the music overpowers the message of the song, then I think we're in trouble. Whatever that means. But,
ultimately, though, that question you talked about, it's difficult to do. At some point, do we get to the point of realizing to really put God first is really putting ourselves first, ultimately, because we are created by Him, and therefore to love Him is our highest purpose. Mm-hmm. But we tend to see it as, well, that means I'm not number one. Well, that, in a way, that is being number one, because we are then reaching our highest purpose, and we're created to be.
Mm-hmm.
Try it.
Yeah, I would think we're told that Christ is live within us. If I'm truly letting Him live within me day by day, then that reflection that comes out is going to reflect Him, not me.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what you have to look at when you... Sue and I went to see... He'll remain nameless, but we went to see one of the biggest preachers in the United States. And I thought, well, this is going to be very interesting, because am I going to walk away with how great he is, or, you know, and, you know, I was shocked. So, you know, I mean, that's the way I look at it. Do you walk away with saying, boy, he was good, this was a good speaker, everything, or did you walk away with a feeling that you was spiritually blessed? And I walked away spiritually blessed, but I was shocked, because I thought it would be the other way. So, that's to me is the judgment. What do you walk away with? Not picking on this gentleman, but, you know, if you walk away with, I think he's a nut, because I think he is, on his particular theological discussion, or I think he might be correct, what blessing's that? I mean, does it make any difference in the big scheme of life if Jesus entered the most holy place or God came out of the most holy place? When you kind of don't think it happened either way, then you are throwing in something in there, see? So, this is, well, what great deal is that? That's not glorifying God to me. So, any other comments? Want to have everybody have a fair say?
I think, in short, when John the Baptist, disciples came to John the Baptist, said, hey, you know, look at him. I mean, I think John Baptist had a perfect time. Like you're always saying, Jesus always witnessed all the time. He's always witnessing something, trying to keep people into his flock. And I think that was exactly what he's doing with them. He could have just said, hey, get behind me, Satan, because that's pretty much what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
But no, he said, hey, you know, this is my job, and that's him. And it was pretty much witnessing, saying, hey, come back to what we're here about.
You know?
I mean, it's exactly what he was doing. Yeah, he was stepping aside, but then again, I think also the way he put it, instead,
yeah,
it was witnessing them. Yeah. He could have said, hey, y'all are foolish, go away.
Yeah. I mean, he could have had a, you know, if you've ever been on church boards where there's just a nice fight between two powers, you know, I mean, that's exactly what he could have had. To me, this is the reason that Jesus said there was none greater prophet than John the Baptist. I mean, I think that's what this was built on, is this fact. Read on.
The one who comes from above is above all. The one who is from the earth belongs to the earth and speaks as one from the earth. The one who comes from heaven is above all. He testifies to what he has seen and heard, but no one accepts his testimony. The man who is accepted, who has accepted it, has certified that God is truthful. For the one whom God has sent speaks the words of God, and God gives the Spirit without limit. The Father loves the Son and has placed everything in His hands. Whoever believes in the Son has eternal life, but whoever rejects the Son will not see life, for God's wrath remains in him.
Okay. Now, here's the funny thing. You would think from these verses that John had a perfect understanding of the Messiah and what he was supposed to do, wouldn't you? See, you think it was just absolutely perfect. And yes?
Well, I think maybe at that moment it was. But just sitting in this prison, days or weeks or months later, he began to wonder. I mean, doubt is
right.
Is part of the human experience. It's not, and Jesus didn't condemn him for the doubt. He just said, "Come, fully come, follow me. Mm-hmm. Watch, come and watch me."
Yeah. Now, what does that say about our spiritual journey with God?
Time someone asked me a question, I think I was in college, so I was home for a summer, she asked my sister and I, if we had ever doubted God. And I'm thinking, the thought never entered my mind, where would you get such a crazy thing? But, honestly tell you, since then, I've had those doubts, and I wonder sometimes if she had never asked me that question, if I would never have
doubted. Is it wrong to doubt God?
No, I don't think so.
By the way, if you studied your Sabbath school lesson on love for tomorrow, you studied ahead, because I'm doing faith tomorrow. Rob's going to do love. I like faith. I like to talk. So anyway, we're talking faith. Is it wrong to doubt God? Well, go back through the Old Testament and the New Testament and find out how many people doubted Him and cried out, "Why me? How come it's going?" I mean, starting with we assume the first book of the Bible written was Job. That's pretty well accepted. And boy, there's a guy that asked all the right questions and the tough questions right from the very beginning. See? So what it says in our spiritual journey is, have dialogue with God, and there's nothing wrong with saying to God, "What in the world is going on?" And that's exactly what happened to John the Baptist. He's sitting there about to die. He's waiting for some great miraculous. You can imagine what people were saying to him. And he finally says, go ask him if he's the one.
Could have been as much for their benefit as for his.
Oh, I think he was very sincere at that time. See? But that's our spiritual journey with God. Not everything is up here. I firmly believe for every mountain there's a valley. That's the way life works. And so when he come across, but you would think from this passage he understood. But the passage that I think is most important is, this is a theme that's been through the Old Testament, through the New Testament, and is the same theme today, is choose life or choose death. And that's exactly what John is saying. Is he who chooses the Son chooses life. He who rejects the Son chooses death. And this goes back to Moses. This goes back to Joshua. Goes back through the major prophets. Is choose who you're going to serve. Comments on that?
To me, it just proves that this isn't an even journey. I mean, it's not all, we're not all just getting better and better. It's an up and down journey.
It's just like teaching about the time that you think somebody gets it. I know in sales training, about the time I think they get it, they come up with one of the most ridiculous questions you've ever had, and you're thinking, I just had a 13-week series every Monday on training, and you know, at the end of it, you think, where were these people? You know, but that's life. Can you imagine what God's going through? Yeah. Saying, where are these people? So, is that the end of it?
Pardon?
Is that the end of it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. John the Baptist, called the greatest of the prophets by Jesus himself. But what a tremendous person he must have been to do what he did. But at the height of his ministry, he must increase, I must decrease. What a person. Father in heaven, we're thankful that John went into detail with John the Baptist in this situation. Says a lot of things. It says that our witness must be about you, not about ourselves. It says that we will have internal conflicts in our spiritual life, in our spiritual journey, but we almost always have to show your love and who you are and to testify of you. And finally, as John said, we choose life and we choose death. Help us, Father, to keep focused on you. Thank you for the drawing of your love to us, and thank you for what you've done in our lives. We're thankful for this group here tonight. Give us all a blessing. In Jesus' name, amen.